great breakfast.
Protein, go for it.
It'll be much less terrifying if you just come to me.
Mothman's got nards!
Make love in the hammock!
Good.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Film Actually, episode 100 for the 18th of September, 2010. I am Dave McVeigh, and I am joined by Josh Philpott and Dave Kosicki. How are you, Dave?
I have to say, and I thought I'd just cement my standing in this show so people know. Surrounded for maximum, recorded for maximum freshness. You sound like a Tampax. That is all. I just wanted to let people know.
For our audio
Dave's
listeners,
back, bitches.
For our audio listeners who may not know what he's talking about, in the opening credits it says recorded live for maximum freshness. But yes, I agree with you a little bit.
So for those heavy days. Geek actually and Film actually has got your back.
Okay, Dave's back. Alright, so what is this? This is Film Actually, the official movie podcast of the Geek Actually Network. This is part of our 100th episode celebration. The big celebration is coming up in the after show, so for the audio listeners, that will be Tuesday. For the live listeners, in just over an hour, we'll be doing the after show stuff. And if you don't get enough Dave in this show, in the after show, we've got some wonderful clips of Dave.
Really? Oh, Jesus Christ.
We have Dave reducing us to tears.
Tears, absolutely.
That's a good thing. I thought it was more like Dave being an asshole.
No. It's actually.
We also have a montage of every swear word you've ever said. It's 27 minutes long. Oh,
it's the entire show. Thank you very much for coming.
Is that all? Fuck!
No, we've actually got in the after show, as a little teaser for those who are coming up, we've actually got a montage of clips that basically where we all lost it to the point where so we've actually got some clips from platforms, some clips from tech actually, some clips from film.
Oh, that's going to be great. Thank you for destroying my afternoon of games reviewing, because now I'll be watching that with one corner of my eye when I get back home.
And we also have a wonderful clip, if you remember the event, which was your first meeting with Mirren.
Oh, yes.
So that's also well worth staying tuned for.
She's the only woman in the history of man or womankind that actually got me to stop for a second.
It was only a moment.
Fuck?
It was only a moment. And to do that with Dave is an incredible thing.
It is an achievement. If you were a gamer, that would be at least 100 Microsoft points right there.
It was a fantastic moment. So we've captured that. We've got that for the after show as well. We also have guests coming in the after show and all sorts of wonderful stuff. So it's going to be fun. Stick with us for that if you are watching live. Now, today we are actually going to forego news because we actually have two films to review because we missed last week. Unfortunately, things just got the better of us and we just couldn't do it. So the 100th episode was pushed and we needed to bring this back to have two reviews today. So we are going to review The Sorcerer's Apprentice, which was actually last week's review. And then we are going to review that stellar masterpiece of visual effects extravaganza.
I don't know what you're talking about. Best film of all time. And I'm going to take Dave's.
Stole my line already? God, I felt like M. Night Shyamalan raped everything that was good about it. But anyway,
we'll come back to that because there's some good stuff in there to come back to.
Oh, dude. Can I have one request? I know that it's in the show notes, but before we actually play the film, can we actually do the color?
Yeah, I think so. I was going to put it after the film, after we raped him.
But it just makes so much sense to lead in with it, because then everything we say afterwards will make so much more sense.
Delta Knight says, lost it? Which time? Yeah, there were a few. We've got them. And the film that we are talking about, of course, is The Last Airbender. We'll come back to that one. That's our second review. We also have, as Josh has alluded to, we have a little video that was made by College Humor, which is brilliant.
Spoiler alert. Sorry.
So funny stuff. We also have a new list of five. Now, this is actually a listener-requested list of five. This week, we're doing techie movies. Now, this was kind of loose. He didn't give us any details.
That's how we like it.
So we've just kind of concocted our lists, and I'm not sure if we're on the same page or not as to what techie movies consists of, but we will find out when we get to that part. Let's move straight into our first review of the day, though, because I think we're all agreed that this one actually wasn't so bad.
I'm going to go on a limb. Greatest movie of all time. Let me just blow the dust off that one. That feels good.
All right, so the first film up is The Sorcerer's Apprentice, directed by John Turteltaub and written by Matt Lopez, Doug Miro, and Carlo Bernard, inspired by The Sorcerer's Apprentice sequence in Walt Disney's Fantasia. It stars Nicolas Cage, Jay Baruchel, Alfred Molina, Teresa Palmer, Toby Kebbell, Alice Krige, and Monica Bellucci. Let me just stop there for 1 second. Okay. Now, this synopsis is taken straight from Walt Disney Pictures. I didn't write this one. It says, Balthazar Blake, played by Nicolas Cage, is a master sorcerer in modern-day Manhattan, trying to defend the city from his arch-nemesis Maxim Horvath, played by Alfred Molina. Balthazar can't do it alone, so he recruits David Stutler, Jay Baruchel, a seemingly average guy who demonstrates hidden potential, as his reluctant protege. The sorcerer gives his unwilling accomplice a crash course in the art of science of, in the art and science of magic. Together, these unlikely partners work to stop the forces of darkness. It'll take all the courage Dave can muster to survive his training, save the city, and get the girl, as he becomes the sorcerer's apprentice. Actually, that's really the badly worded. Isn't it apprentice. As he becomes the sorcerer? He already is the apprentice. Anyway,
I think they're just cashing in on, they're like, we've got a tenuous link to this Disney thing anyway. If we do anything else to change it, we're royally fucked. So, yeah, it's the apprentice. Put the mops in. It'll be fine.
Absolutely. Damn straight. Although, it's one of my favorite scenes in the film. Yeah,
it was a great scene.
All right, let's have a look at the trailer for The Sorcerer's Apprentice before we go into our review. This was trailer number 4, actually not my favorite of the trailers. I think the trailer just prior to this one was actually a better trailer, but this one showed more stuff. So here we go. This is the trailer for The Sorcerer's Apprentice.
Everything you thought you knew about the world is about to change.
Few weeks ago, I was just a normal college kid.
Let's get it bumping. Thank you.
And then he showed up.
Hello, Dave.
You are going to be a force for good and a very important sorcerer.
What?
All over the world, dark forces are gathering.
Hello, Balthazar.
You've been chosen to stop them.
Shock. Let's go train. I'm gonna give you the basics. Weapon of choice. Plasma bolt.
I got one.
And again.
I did it.
Something about you seems different.
I'm a sorcerer.
Well, that's new.
This should be a lot of fun.
Great men have always been called. This is your calling.
No way.
That's my car.
Whoops.
This is crazy.
But it is fun.
Now it's my turn.
Every sorcerer needs a nice pair of pointy shoes.
These are old man shoes.
Excuse me?
I love them. A lot.
Hadouken.
All right, so that was the trailer for The Sorcerer's Apprentice. We're going to start with our guest of honor, Dave.
Tell us. Well, one thing I've always said about Nicolas Cage is he's not afraid to go big. And and he actually was medium in this. He was really, I thought Cage was wonderfully restrained throughout the entire film.
Yeah.
And is it just me, or does, what's a Jay Baruchel?
Baruchel.
Yeah. Isn't he like a nerdified version of a young Christian Slater? The way that he talks and everything is just like, I don't know what's going on, so I'm just going to
I actually fell in love with Jay Baruchel with How to Train Your Dragon, because he's the voice of the star. And he is so funny, just because all you're getting is his voice. And his delivery of some of the lines is so funny in that film that you just find yourself guffawing. You know?
The casting of this film was spectacular. I mean, I'll admit, I walked into this expecting it to be a steaming turd.
I'm right there with you.
And I just was like, oh, fuck, why am I coming on this show to do this crap? I was like, too bad for Jesus. But then after about 5 minutes, I was like, okay, Cage is being restrained and he's actually playing the part really well. He's incredibly likable. Mm. And everyone just hit their keynotes throughout the entire film. Mm,
yeah.
You know, Alfred Molina, as I said before, he needs to be in every movie. He's the main adversary. And he's
look, as soon as he made his appearance in this, I just leaned over to Josh and went, he should be in every single movie. I just adore this man.
Yeah, yeah, right? I know. He has the best lines in the entire film. And like one of the best parts in this film is where he's talking to Jay in the bathrooms halfway through the film. And there's just this one line that he delivers where he's like, I'm going to kill you in this bathroom. He looks around, he's like, it's not very
elegant.
It's not very elegant, but you know, like I'll have to. Anyone else would have failed that line miserably, but yeah, no, the man's delivery is just impeccable.
Every time I look at him, I just think of him in The Prince of Persia with that thing going, taxes.
Yeah.
And it just sticks in my head. I mean, I've loved the guy for years. I mean, he's a brilliant actor, and yeah, he can play either side of the fence. And I think this is probably, like Dave was saying just before, that this is definitely a resurgence of Cage. Like, I honestly believe, agree with you that I think he's back. You know?
Oh, we'll put it this way. At the beginning of this year, he was a laughingstock. Yeah. Everything he was doing, we made fun of him, we laughed about it, we gave you the Nicolas Cage action set, you know. It was a joke, you know.
Yeah. And well, then I think that's the whole thing, because he got that kind of, you know, Tom Cruise-esque kind of anyone from sort of that 90s really powerful actor situation where they were just throwing him anything. Mm. And the only thing that was happening was he was just getting movies he had no interest in. It was like just to pay the bills kind of thing. And it's just like the last few films, he's had a concept of what he wants to do. In Kick-Ass, he wanted to go for that Adam West Batman kind of thing and really sell that. And because he had that concept, it worked. In this, it's no sort of surprise or, you know, sort of hidden thing that he loves sorcery and magic.
Oh, absolutely. He loves magic.
And so, you know, he had a love for the source material. So it's like, if you give the guy the right stuff,
what's interesting is I was actually reading an interview with John Turteltaub, who directed the film, and he actually said it was Cage who originated the entire project. He brought it to him. He brought it to Bruckheimer. He said, I've got this idea for this film, you know, of the Fantasia elements to it and all this stuff. So he really was behind this whole thing. This was a piece of love for him. He really wanted this to be good.
He also needed money.
Well, he already had to sell his castles and stuff. I mean,
yeah. Well, I've got a nice bit of trivia since you've segued it so nicely for me. The director, what was it, John
Turteltaub? Yeah,
Turteltaub. his very first producer credit is on a TV show called Rocket Man. So, do you think that Nicolas Cage was walking up to him and casting, going, "It's you. You're the Rock." that is true, by the way. It's all true.
There's another John Turteltaub. I'm becoming a John Turteltaub show. There's an interview actually in I think it was Empire magazine. Mm. I think 2 months ago or a month ago, and he was interviewed. And it was one of the funniest interviews I've ever read. The guy is really funny. He's this really self-deprecating Jewish guy who basically makes fun of himself the whole time. He makes all these Jewish jokes.
Making fun.
He makes all these Jewish
Jews
jokes at his own
funny
at his own expense. And he actually said that at a screening of when he made National Treasure, the first National Treasure, he said that they came out and said that was surprisingly good.
What a shit thing.
I know. And then he said that he made his next film and somebody came out and said that was surprisingly good. And he said when he made Sorcerer's Apprentice, he said the first thing that somebody said to him when they came out, they said that was surprisingly good. And he actually said, I want to know when I become the director who's not surprisingly good anymore.
It'll be when he casts a film without Nicolas Cage. What, a Cage film was good? You're insane.
Look, I adored this film. I thought it was a lot of fun. The first 2 or 3 minutes of the film, Josh and I almost kind of looked at each other and went, what the hell are we doing here? The bit with the kids and all this stuff. And we thought, oh dear, this is not shaping up
for
well.
For me, what happened was it was that terribly cut together 5 minute kind of, this is the entire story in like 10 seconds.
The Merlin sequence. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That bit there, I was kind of like, oh, Jesus Christ. And then when it got to the kids, but it clicked in my mind, I was like, I'm watching a kids film. I've got to let this stuff go, because if you don't, you're just going to...
And then you kind of go, oh, I'm seeing The Sorcerer's Apprentice. You know? it's like, it makes sense now, you know? Mm. And then from there, once you accept what you're watching and just allow it to take you along for the ride, it's a lot of fun. And you start, and it's got great special effects. I mean,
they were uncaged.
yes,
zing.
I thought it was a lot of fun. It's not a perfect film by any means.
Oh, look, there's massive, you know, gaping holes here and there. And I mean, especially, I won't talk about the climax, but the Achilles heel of the entire take over the world thing is hinged on a satellite dish. I found quite hilarious. Like, you've got the most powerful beings in the world, and they're just like, if this isn't aligned correctly, I can't get any signal on my phone. So apparently,
well,
the apocalypse.
I'm not sure if you're aware, Dave, but it's very difficult to get cell phone reception when you're trying to call to another dimension. You know, I'm just
what are you talking
just
about?
Saying.
You need a better carrier. You should merge with AT&T and Verizon.
That's where I'm going.
I guess for people who don't know, it's kind of the Sorcerer's Apprentice. They've kind of done a retelling of the Merlin story, or reincarnation of Merlin, I guess you could say. Jay Baramella is, and you've got Cage as one of his apprentices. Alfred Molina is the other apprentice,
and Bellucci,
Monica Bellucci is the third, and love interest for both guys. So it creates a lot of tension. I think they balanced it out really nicely, and the special effects were great.
Yeah.
The mirror work that they did, and
that's such a clever sequence. Minor spoilers, but the concept is, if you go there's a mirror trick that they do, and if you end up on the other side of the mirror, everything's in reverse.
Yeah,
and that's actually really clever the way they handled that. So.
And the only way that you can get back through is if you go through your own reflection, which I thought was really, really cool. And I can't remember the name of the actor, but the guy from Rock and Roller,
Toby Kebbell.
Toby Kebbell as this sort of like he's got this 101 Dalmatians hairstyle. And he
looks
like
something like from Flock of Seagulls.
Yeah, and he looks like a cross between David Blaine and Chris Angel, and just emanates douchebag from every pore. And he is just absolutely fantastic from every moment.
And I'm actually glad he did this, because I loved him in Rock and Roller, and I thought he was awful in Prince of Persia. Mm. And I sat there during Prince of Persia going, really? You're better than this material, you know? And to have him come back and do this, I thought, this is more like his Rock and Roller personality.
He needs an outrageous personality, because he just pulls it off so effortlessly.
Mm. He's got that kind of Russell Brand-esque kind of a rock star nature to him. It's just every scene you see him, and you just expect him to be signing something or stuff. I love that scene where they walk, where they're walking through the middle of the city, and Alfred Molina is
telling
that
his
dialogue
plan,
and then turns around and finds him kind of walking through a sea of people, kind of signing things. Oh God!
Especially, he's insecure through every moment. You don't know who I am.
Yeah, and I love it. And I love the production design of his apartment. with all the really, you know, gaudy, like, you know, historical artifacts, but they all look kind of Vegas-y.
And not only that, like the portraits of himself with, like, you know, his hands out,
women,
like, you know, just like that.
Women, like,
women
clawing
fawning at him and stuff like that. It is so, if you've ever watched, I had the extreme misfortune of watching an MTV Cribs while I was in the States, which focused on Chris Angel. And it was on just his dressing room in Las Vegas for his performance. Now, this room would have been, like, maybe twice, three times the size of this studio.
Right.
And it probably had $10 million worth of kit thrown in it. And it had all of that shit. It had like hologram pictures of himself on the wall. And so it was the second that I saw that apartment, that was all I thought of. I was like, oh my God, it's Chris Angel's cribs.
I love our pedantic geeks in our chat room. Deltonite said, wasn't it a lot of satellites? You're saying it was one. Yeah, but they knocked out one.
No, there were three.
Yeah, and
there
all they had to do was knock out one.
Well, guys, I'm not sure if you know, but all they were actually doing was the you know, sort of sorcerer's equivalent of making a cell phone call. But what you don't understand is, in America, they have AT&T. So that's actually really difficult to do. So, you know, you need three satellites just to make a phone call.
In America,
call.
They sell those AT&T boosters that you can put in your house. You know, that's all they're doing. They're just setting up.
They should have gone to Verizon. Verizon's got much more coverage.
Exactly. And look, I mean, the honest truth is, that's the only reason that the good guys won over the bad guys. Because, you know, bad guys had bad reception.
Thank you, AT&T, for saving the world with your shittiness.
and Delta Knight is also saying that they think the first bit about Merlin was a great bit of info. I mean, it was. It was necessary info we needed, but it just felt a little bit on the cheese.
Didn't you guys get the feeling, though, that it was kind of explained again, kind of three quarters
on? It kind of was. And it's actually kind of sloppy filmmaking, which is why the film is not perfect, because stuff like that can be revealed throughout, but obviously in a test screening, my guess would be in a test screening, they went, oh, it's not clear enough, and they went and shot this little prologue.
It is made for Americans, so you have to take it with a grain of salt. And, you know, that I'm surprised that Nicolas Cage just didn't hold up a sign halfway through over Jay's head like, reincarnated Merlin. Arrow on his head, and, you know,
save time.
Good guy, bad guy over Alfred Molina. But no,
you just stare at Alfred Molina, and he's obviously the bad guy. It doesn't even matter what film he's in.
No good guy has a mustache like
also,
that.
Also, bad guys are always better dressed.
Mm. Oh, he was impeccable.
He was an absolute pimp in that film. He just had
sorry. Gear. If anyone was a pimp, man, Nicolas Cage, that fucking leather jacket, man. That was, he was walking around. All he needed was like a hat with a feather in it and a cane. And
a cane.
Where's my sorcerer's bitches?
All right, I don't think we can talk about this film anymore without at least addressing the one scene, which is what inspired the whole thing, which is the scene from Fantasia. Now, if you haven't seen Fantasia, see it to start with. It is a masterpiece. But there's one sequence in Fantasia which has Mickey Mouse as the Sorcerer's Apprentice being left alone to clean the chamber, and it's all done to music, and basically he uses spells to bring the mops to life, and then of course loses control, and the whole thing is about how he loses control and there's mops everywhere and everything's going crazy, and that's kind of the scene that inspired this film. And of course they recreate that scene in this film, and you see it, they've shown clips of it online and stuff, so it's not really spoiling anything, but I thought the scene was really, really nicely handled, and a really nice piece of music to it, because they took the original Sorcerer's Apprentice theme, and I think it's Trevor Rabin did the music, and he reworked it into his theme, and it's just a really, really beautiful scene. And Jay Baruchel, the one thing he does really well, like Michael J. Fox before him, is that whole exasperated thing. And he's trying to stop these,
I don't know,
man. Mops.
I would almost give him the Shia LaBeouf thing. He's the perfect... He is the new version of...
He's Shia LaBeouf more neurotic.
Exactly. Yeah. He's that complete...
Michael Cera or Jesse Eisenberg.
Exactly.
But he's more neurotic.
He's the more neurotic version. He's the, epitome of male inadequacy. It's just like, he just perfectly instills everything that
also,
is nerd.
There's one thing I don't understand, which is happening with a lot of Hollywood's young stars at the moment, which is, I call it the Stallone mouth, which is, they've all called it like, what's his name, Milo from Heroes has called it as well, where they start talking, and then after a while, they do three or four films with their mouth like this. Jay talks like this out the side.
It's called
of his
stroke
mouth.
Acting.
It's just, I don't know what it is, but it reeks of Stallone. It's just something I
it
thought
does.
I'd bring.
And Jay Baruchel's got that. There's that line that comes at the end of the mop scene where he's trying to talk to his girlfriend. And the mops are knocking the back of his head, and he just goes, "I've got issues," and he slides back into the room. It's a really, really clever scene. I really enjoy it. I'm going to go out on a limb, and I'm going to say I would recommend this film to anybody. I'd say, time. You know,
it's a perfect Sunday film. Like if you're going to sit at home on the couch, or if you just feel like getting out and just, you know, having a lazy day, it's a great. You know what I mean? There's not much to it as far as story. Do you know what I mean? It's not going to blow your mind, but it's fun and it's entertaining. It's a great family film, I think.
I think so, I agree.
Yeah, Josh? No, look, dude, absolutely. I don't think there's anyone that I wouldn't suggest this movie to. It's like, it's one of those great family-friendly films, but at the same time, like, as an adult, you can walk into it and enjoy it as well. So there's no reason for anyone not to see this film.
Fantastic. We're not actually going to do a spoiler zone on The Sorcerer's Apprentice. I don't think it needs it.
No.
I think it is just a lot of fun, and I want to save spoilers for Last Airbender, because I think we're really going to have a little talk about that. But before we
don't need spoilers, man. It's already been spoiled.
Yeah, we may as well just lead in, spoiler alert for that film.
Well,
it's shit.
We'll give it a micro-review first, and then we'll just open it up to spoilers. But Last Airbender, that's the one. We have a video, and before we actually talk about that, I think we should talk a little bit about M. Night Shyamalan.
I want to talk about the name of the film. No. Do you know why it's called The Last Airbender?
Because James Cameron stole Avatar already.
He made it. Unobtainium.
Oh, there you go. Very good. Yeah. All right. So before we get into this, I just want to ask one simple question, which is, how the hell does M. Night Shyamalan still get money? This is a man who has no track record. His last four films have been flops.
I believe he uses the Uwe Boll clause.
But no, it's weird, because we were actually talking about this a little while ago. He does have that kind of sensibility to him. It's just, I wonder whether or not this is just him and he really is aware that his films are that bad, but people hate him so vehemently that he makes money out of it somehow.
But they doesn't, though.
Which studio did this?
This is Nickelodeon and Paramount. So
I think that what happened is he just slinks around Paramount and he just waits outside the VP's door and in a corner maybe, and he just like, give me money.
My lovely wife Katie had a hypothesis, which is his films are probably so bad because he expends all of his energy schmoozing. Because he's obviously the best talker in Hollywood. He's obviously manages to just, you know, con his way through Hollywood, saying I'm the best person, you know, completely believing in his bullshit. Before we go on, let's just watch.
Oh, he strikes me as a man that believes in his own bullshit.
I think he does believe his own bullshit. Let's have a look at this video. This is from College Humor. Discovered this earlier in the week, and it actually made me laugh out loud, and I thought, oh my God, this is brilliant. And it's right up there with, if you remember, College Humor did that send-up of Tim Burton not long ago, where they talked about, you know, how Tim Burton makes a movie, which was also brilliant. Anyway, this is called, the video is called No One Likes M. Night Shyamalan. And I'll let the video speak for itself, and then we'll come back. Here we go.
Everyone groaned when they saw my name. I don't understand.
Maybe people don't like your movies anymore?
No. It has to be something else. I mean The Sixth Sense.
You're a genius, M. Night Shyamalan.
There's plenty more where that came from.
To the mind of M. Night Shyamalan!
Hear, hear.
It's like when people see my movies, they're disappointed.
Look, your movies are based on twists, and even those have started to suck.
What's happening to me?
You're becoming less popular?
Impossible.
Possible.
68%, 18%, 8%. There has to be some kind of pattern.
Yeah, down? The pattern is down?
No, it's something to do with the AIDS.
M. Night! I love Lady in the Water.
Oh, thank you. Did I imagine I had fans? I feel like I'm losing my mind of M. Night Shyamalan. It's like people don't even recognize me.
Really? You put yourself in all of your movies.
I know.
I'm sorry, Mr. Shyamalan. We don't have a table for you.
Do you know who I am?
I just said Mr. Shyamalan.
Excuse me, table 8 has Rotten Tomatoes.
You're the only person I can trust.
Did you even see the happening? I mean, trees? Really?
Not you too!
Not you too!
Shyamalan. My career is dying.
Your career's been dead the whole time.
All right, so that's Everybody Hates M. Night Shyamalan, which I think just kind of really sums up what we're about to talk about.
My favorite line of that entire thing is just at the start where the guy, she says, maybe your films are getting terrible, and he just goes, no, it must be something else.
I like when she goes, the pattern is down. And I'd like to point out that in that video, which was in this last week, it has Last Airbender at 8%. I believe it's down to 7% now, so it's actually falling further.
If I put a score on my review for Penthouse, it definitely would have gone down.
All right, so let's talk about what film we are talking about. This is The Last Airbender, written, produced, and directed by M. Night Shyamalan, based on the 2005 Nickelodeon animated series Avatar: The Last Airbender, created by Michael Dante DiMartino and Brian Konietzko, I think it's pronounced. It stars Noah Ringer, Dev Patel, Nicola Peltz, Jackson Rathbone, Sean Taub, Asif Manvi, and Cliff Curtis. Now, I found a synopsis online, but I didn't like it, so I modified it. So it's kind of a combination of IMDb and me. Okay, so I just said, the air, water, earth, and fire nations are tied by destiny, and the most powerful benders, people who can control the elements, are kept in balance by the Avatar, the one person who can control all four elements and communicate with the spirit world for guidance. When the Avatar disappears, the fire nation launches a brutal war against the others. A century has passed with no hope in sight to change the path of this destruction until a waterbender and her brother discover Aang, the lost Avatar, in the ice. caught between, now mind you, by the way, this is the first 2 minutes of the film. Mm. Caught between combat and courage, Aang, played by Noah Ringer, rediscovers he is the lone avatar with the power to stop the war and reunite the nations. And then it was based, of course, on the hugely successful Nickelodeon animated TV series, which has been completely raped.
I just thought you might like to know, dude, the tomato meter is now at 6%.
Six! It's fallen even further. Fantastic. So let's have a look at the trailer for The Last Airbender so you can all gag along with us. Okay, here we go.
The power to control the elements is bestowed upon a chosen few. The Fire Nation has declared war. But some believe there is still hope.
I always knew you'd return. You are the only one who can control all the elements and bring peace to our world.
I will stop them.
You may already be too late.
I will not live in peace until I find him.
Reasons each of us are born. We have to find those reasons.
It has begun.
And 3D just to top it all off. So there you go. All right.
I just like that it's foreshadowing its own demise by saying the last Airbender. Yes, it will be the last.
I love the fact that in the opening of the film, it actually comes up Book One Water, and Josh leans over to me at the film and goes, do you think for the DVD release they're going to remove that?
Yeah.
All right, before we even address the film, I just want to address the 3D really quickly and say, shit.
Wait, no, there was none.
No, there was none.
I'm sorry. No. There were two instances of 3D,
yeah.
Which was when they went to a new location and the words came up underneath.
Oh, the words,
and
yeah.
The words were raised like in Heroes or something like that, and that was the only sign
I spent,
3D.
I spent the whole movie with the glasses off. I would only put them on when the scenes were
That's right, and you had no double image, but what you did have without the glasses was it just looked vaguely fuzzy, you know?
Even that was very, very rarely.
Yeah. Look, the 3D, like Clash of the Titans before, this is a rush job post-convert, and it is another argument for not post-converting films because, and look, post-convert can work. All right, it can work. If you plan it from the very beginning and you post-convert over a course of a year, Piranha 3D was post-converted, and it's a good 3D. It actually works as 3D. It's not as good as a film shot in 3D, but it does work.
Look, I think 3D, they just need to fucking do... If you're going to do 3D, it's a 3D film from the start. It's not this 3D. Yeah. So that we can... What? So they wrangled an extra... I'm aesthetic. I didn't pay for this fucking movie. But, you know, if you did, they charge you, what, $25 or something? $23
Yeah, well, we luckily saw it at a discount cinema. But, yeah.
So you had $15 for us?
It's like $15, $16. But if you go to Greater Union, it's $23.
Yeah, yeah, so you're paying $23 to not see it in 3D and to see a shit film. You know?
Agreed. So I just sit there and go, and films like this, and sorry to interrupt, but films like this and Clash of the Titans are going to ruin this lovely 3D phenomenon we're having. Because people will go... If this is their only experience of a 3D film, they're going to go, why would I go see a 3D film? It's crap.
Well, and the other thing I want to point out is I actually found it kind of interesting that there was no 2D release of this film. It's like this could be a complete release.
Well, there's supposed to be, but I don't know where it is. I would have seen it in 2D. I didn't want to see it in
exactly,
3D.
But not even that for me. The thing that annoyed me even more than that was the fact that because there was none, you've actually lost even... You've actually... halved your chance that you're going to get box office success.
And how pissed off would you have been if you had paid like IMAX prices for this?
Oh, fuck no, man.
You know? I mean, I just, the 3D was shocking.
Speaking of IMAX, just to segue for 2 seconds, sure. But I had the opportunity to go last week and I saw Hubble in 3D.
I want
to
see that.
It is fucking amazing.
Yeah, no,
it is only 40 minutes long and it's narrated by Leo. Leonardo DiCaprio. It is proper 3D.
Mm-hmm.
And no, seriously, it is the most humbling experience I've ever had.
The trailer came out for it about 6 months ago, and the trailer,
sorry to segue, but the
footage in the trailer is phenomenal. My wife is a scientist, and we watched it, and it was like, we have to see this.
Suze went. My flatmate Suze, who's been on the show before, she went in and had a look, and she was she basically saw it on a Monday, and then she just said, "We're going on Wednesday." And she's seen it 3 times in 1 week. And, yeah.
We'll see it for the show.
Yep.
Seriously, I highly recommend it. Yeah. It is. Okay. Sorry to just go. No, there, please recommend.
I have a feeling that this film review is going to have a lot of segues because there's only so much we can talk about it without dry retching in each short dose.
Oh. Well, let me start then.
You start.
Because this could be my last appearance on this show, depending on how I rape this. I have to say, across the board, this is... a horrible, horrible film. Yeah. I think I'll go for the pluses first, which is I think that they had locations which they shot in New Zealand and Vietnam were beautiful.
Absolutely.
I think it was stunning. I think the costume design was exceptional. I think they did a brilliant, brilliant job, and everything else was shit.
Well, actually, no, I'll go one step further as well, though. I thought the visual effects work was really good, too. Mm. Industrial Light and Magic,
visual effects, not the way they were actually shot.
Not the way they're shot, but the visual effects work, it's done.
There were some that I found really cheap.
There's an old saying in visual effects, which is the two hardest things to do are fire and water, to make them realistic in any way, shape, or form. And if you watch Predators recently, you'll know that they fucked up the fire completely, okay? Because it looks cartoony or whatever.
What? Predators is a great
movie. I love Predators. No, I love Predators, but that scene where the fire
comes out. Dude,
where
the fire comes out the top of the ship and it's like one piece of flat animation. It's like
2D fire. Get with the future.
But it's future, I thought retro. Industrial Light and Magic, who in the tech show we already talked about, has just turned 35 this year and are at the top of their game. All the bending work, work of the fire bending and the water bending was phenomenal. Mm. It looks like water. It looks like fire. It moves realistically, It's got this really beautiful, beautiful effects work. I thought Appa, I'm a big fan of the original series, and I thought Appa, the flying bison, I loved Appa. I thought
he wasn't cartoony enough.
He looked like, to me, it was a cross between Falcor and one of the Where the Wild Things Are.
Well, yeah, but that's kind of how he looks in the cartoon as well. So, you know.
I'm not familiar with the cartoon. To be honest, I wanted to go back and watch it, but after rinsing the bile from my mouth at the end of this movie, I just couldn't
remember. Okay, as somebody who is now just... Because I've just given it to Josh, and Josh just started working his way through it.
Yeah.
And halfway through this movie, Josh goes, would you think anybody would mind if I just went back to watching the cartoon now?
Literally, if there's one thing this film did, because I've seen the first half of season one and then I went and watched this movie, the first thing I did when I left the cinema was go somewhere quiet, sit down and watch an episode, because the series is quite possibly one of the best, it's one of those rare kid series that is so not kiddie.
Yes.
And yet it just...
And it's got this really unique blend, because it's an American series made by Nickelodeon, but its sensibility is so rooted in manga.
It just has those manga-esque
It's Japanese, man. That's the Japanese
philosophy. But it's not, though.
To treat children without condescending to children and giving them strong morals.
Right.
And seeing people die and whatever else. I mean, look, I really wanted to go into this and go, okay, this could be something really different. I was expecting, because I'm not a fan of Shyamalan's movies, with the exception of Unbreakable. But besides that, I just think the guy is just useless. And this film did nothing to dissuade me from that.
Not at all.
I thought that the editing was sloppy, the acting was terrible.
I actually said to Josh, I said, I think quite possibly Noah Ringer, who plays Aang, was the worst child star since Jake Lloyd in Phantom Menace.
Yes, thank you so much. He was terribly miscast. He was horrible. The chick, I can't even remember what her name was. The little girl. She was wrong, man. There was not a single scene that I believed any line that she said. Yeah. And then Jason Hawthorne as her brother. Yeah. We should have known, being an actor from Twilight, that he was going to be.
Sorry, Jackson Rathbone.
Jackson Rathbone. Close enough.
That's where I knew him from. So yeah. I was all the way through. I'm going, where do I know this kid from? It's Twilight.
Yeah, I'm sad that I had to research. Sorry, Josh. I'm just
go.
I just got to get it out. Then I'll let.
He's the crazy brother who is fighting the urge to eat people. Yeah. That's right. Oh, I remember.
So, he's just less than useless. And I mean, and Cliff Curtis, who's usually incredibly dependable, sleptwalked through the entire fucking scene. Every scene he did was terrible. The only shining light was the relationship between Dev Patel and Sean Tobe, which was
completely miscast, mind you, because Uncle Iroh in the series is my favorite character in the series.
Yeah,
he's this roly poly. Holy rotund guy who's completely unassuming. And the
other thing is the character in the film, though I have to agree with Dave, if you hadn't actually seen it, he played it really well. Like
he did. No. His acting is great. Yeah, he's just physically completely wrong.
Exactly. And you know what? To credit, because I was thinking about this afterwards, because Dave was saying yesterday that he actually liked both those two. The kid that actually played the fire,
Dev Patel,
was actually really good. Like, he deserves credit.
Well, he's from Slumdog Millionaire. I mean, he's actually a good actor.
He's an actor, yes.
And like on his own, he would stand as quite a good character, the uncle. It's like, compare him to the series, and he's much less lovable.
Problem is, he's completely badly written in this. I mean, the character of Zuko has completely been mismanaged. Mm. The point that we made when we came out of this entire fucking fiasco of a movie was the fact that M. Night Shyamalan, I said to Josh when we walked out, this is not a hard film to write. You've got great source material sitting there. You could just lift passages straight from this thing and put it into a film.
Well, it's interesting because in the article I'm writing at the moment about it, one of the things that I said was it's amazing that he not only managed to screw it up, but managed to miss every possibility.
Yeah. And then
that's the trademark twist.
Yeah. And then what he did was he literally took scenes and rearranged the order of them because obviously they didn't work the first time round. And so so as an example, and this is, all right, look, we're going to say it right up front that there may be spoilers for Last Airbender because we don't recommend this film. Is that fair to say? We don't
recommend it? Absolutely. Don't go and see this movie.
I don't even recommend accidentally stumbling into this.
No.
If somebody gives you a free ticket, put it on eBay.
Yeah, yep. Or burn it. Don't subject somebody else to it. Or give it to your enemy. Give it to the person you hate most.
Yeah.
Just in case, we're going to have spoilers coming up, okay? So, as an example, near the end of the film, Sokka, Jackson Rathbone, meets the princess, okay? Now,
I like her.
We'll come back to her in a minute. But the point is that this is in the cartoon series, this is actually a romance. And you see them get to know each other and they fall in love with each other. And then when we have that scene, which is in the cartoon, where he says, we need somebody to protect the princess. And he stands up and says, I'll do it. And the king says, I thought you might. We have a history that we've actually seen that grow. M. Night Shyamalan decides we'll have no precursor to that whatsoever except for one little piece of narration dialogue, which is Sokka took a bit of a shining to the princess. Okay, so that's it. And then the next scene we go, I'll protect her. And the king says, I thought you might. Why would you think that? Why on earth would you think that he might
step up?
He has
that look in his face like you want to
bone
impregnate
my daughter.
Yeah, you want to impregnate my daughter.
And then, because M. Night Shyamalan's such a good writer, and then he then puts another scene at the end of that, which is where they're walking along and having a little intimate moment where she talks about having part of the moon in her and all this sort of stuff. And you go, that needed to be before the other scene.
I don't know. I like the way it is because it kind of makes Jackson to be a badass where he just kind of gives her one look and he's like, sup. And she's just like, starts fluttering her eyes. Oh my God. And then the old man's like, oh, I saw that. You're going to bone her.
And right there, you summed up something as well, which is, he's a badass. In the cartoon, Sokka is the comedy relief.
Yeah, no. He
and there's a whole story
so
arc
good.
To him where he starts kind of being this buffoon. And
nah,
by the
sexist,
third...
Sexist
buffoon.
I like him already.
And then by this third season, he has become the hero that he needs to become.
Yeah.
And so there's a curve. There's a learning arc there. And no, we're not. Fuck that.
Look, they threw everything away. As I said, I'm not even familiar. I did some research about this and looked it all up to see what was going on.
Sorry, Delta Night in our chat room says, the moon is in her? Did she get fucked by the moon?
kind of. We don't talk about it.
The first thing I read about this was, I can't remember the name of the casting director. I put it in my review as well, but I saw a press release that they sent out when they were casting background characters, and this sums up the entire film for me, which is that I swear to God, this is like verbatim. We are looking for people of ethnic background. Please turn up in your native dress to casting. This is where it gets better.
Oh,
if
dude,
you are Korean, come in a kimono.
Oh, good. Yes.
Yes, because that is the traditional dress of Koreans.
Yeah.
Wow.
And it was like, if you're Caucasian, it doesn't mean you won't be cast. Mm. But it's like, really, disclaimer. It was just like, yeah. Fuck. It's such a case of style over substance, except there's very little style and absolutely no substance.
Now, there's been a lot talked about on this film about the race bending issue, about the fact that M. Night decided to multicultural the cast and all this sort of stuff. And I still absolutely disagree with his choice. Now, his argument, and this is almost a verbatim.
So what, it was separate races in this film? Mm. Or?
Yeah, well, the whole idea was, he said the different nations were different races. So the Fire Nation were like the dark-skinned Indian. Of course, the bad guys are dark-skinned. You know, so they're dark-skinned. The airbenders are the Asians, you know, and so forth. In the cartoon series, one of the things that makes this cartoon series so clever is the fact that they are all the same race.
Yeah.
It is like different regions of the same country. Now, this is really, really important that M. Night... I don't think M. Night watched this show. It's really important that they are all the same race, because it's all about Aang's journey through the different nations to get to Fire Lord Ozai to fight the Fire Lord and his growth. They manage to go through all the different kingdoms in disguise because they don't know they're airbenders or waterbenders or earthbenders. They all look the same. Mm. It's only when they actually do something. It's the colors of their costumes and stuff. So like when they're hiding out in the Fire Nation in season 3, they do their hair differently, like the Fire Nation would do their hair, and they wear red costumes because Fire Nation always wear red, you know? And so, but they can blend in because they're all the same race. You know? Yeah. And so you sit there and go, they're not going to blend in when they walk into the Earth Kingdom and they're all Asian. And Katara and Sokka are supposed to be Inuits.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, they're from the North Pole, for God's sake.
No, you're expecting
South
like Eskimo or something. Some
and if you notice, casting, they're white and everyone else is an Inuit. You sit there and go, I don't even understand what he was thinking.
It reeks to me that a producer's just gotten in there and gone, we need to make this more friendly for white
people. Now, the quote I was about to say from M. Night before, and I don't have it in front of me, but this is pretty much verbatim, where he actually said, I didn't look at race. I went and I cast the best actors I could find. If that's the best actors you could find... Wow.
Oh, dude, another thing I would just like
that's
to bring
a twist.
Up. That I
think so many twists in this movie.
It's amazing. He's an absolute subtle genius. But one of the other things I wanted to bring up that I just thought was amazing about this film, and again, something I used in my review, is the fact that I love the fact that storytelling is a difficult art form, and I'm never going to say anything otherwise.
No,
it's difficult.
He's
to
a terrible storyteller.
Yeah, I know, but it's difficult to compact a season worth of TV show into a 3-hour movie and pull it off well. But the great thing that he's realized is, I don't need to plan storyline. I don't need to wrap dialogue around this. I'll just use exposition for everything.
Yes.
It's just like in the start of the movie, let's just explain the entire plot for the first like 9 episodes by just having some old lady just outline the entire thing.
But what I love is the fact that they outline it all in the opening. Then she outlines it again, and then later somebody else is talking, and they outline, what, we got it! You could be doing other things with our time right now, you know?
And there are some really bad moments of dialogue. Like, there is one sentence in this movie.
No, there are nothing but really bad
moments. Bad lines of dialogue.
But the ones that really love is this one where they double in it one sentence.
Yes!
They double explain the same point.
Yes.
And I was,
so you're the last airbender? Yes, I bend air.
No,
I'm
it
the
was
last
actually,
one. Are you sure you're the last? Yes, I am bending. Ending of the air.
The line that Josh is talking about where she goes, he needs to go talk to the spirits to get guidance from the spirits.
Yes, that was a fucking line. And I was just like, did no one catch that? Who was fucking editing this shit?
I think what happened was they got Bill Cosby to write the dialogue, and he's like, you see what you need for the bending is with the spirits, get the pudding, and the spirits call in the moon. What the fuck? Like, seriously.
Wow. Not a good movie. Now, yeah. Let's talk about this princess for a minute. I think Josh summed it up best. Oh, I know you thought she was hot, but...
Oh, I'm not talking about her ability. I'm just saying, you know, anytime you take a, how can I put it delicately, a very beautiful ethnic flower. Looking a young lady.
But see, I didn't think she was particularly ethnic looking.
Oh, she is if you take away the blonde hair. She when if you ever had the misfortune of seeing The Spirit, she played the child or teenage version of Eva Mendes's character.
Oh, so, okay.
So you get get that exotic. But when you do that and then you put the blonde hair or the white hair on, sorry, but Dave's brain goes out the window.
Yeah.
And
everything else what we had control. Was we had in the...
we officially nicknamed her Barbie.
Barbie, because I think I'm the only one here who actually made it. Who has made it to the end of the first season. I don't think you've got there yet.
No, not yet.
When you meet the princess in the cartoon series, she's this ethereal beauty. Because she is. She's got part of the moon spirit in her, and she practically glows. You know, she's
first time I wished I was the moon.
And all this is, you know, and so, of course, you know, Sokka falls madly in love with her, and, you know, and she's just this beautiful angel of a person. And then in the movie, we get Barbie.
Yeah.
Don't get me too close to the fish.
Like, she literally talks like that, and one of my favorite lines in the entire film is where Aang asks her if there's somewhere she can meditate, and she's like, yeah, there's like a cave up the back somewhere there, and just like the delivery of that line, I was just like, wow, that is just...
She would have fit right in Twilight.
Exactly, and what I love more than that is the fact that, like, you look at her, and she's supposed to be, you know, basically part god is the whole... She's, you know, part one of the
She's making
spirits.
My spirit rise.
Exactly, and she's supposed to be one of these people, and she's about as spiritual as a plank of wood.
Yeah.
The entire time, there's just this glazed look at her eyes. Like,
excuse
she has
me,
no concept of what's
going on.
That's
how I like my deity.
And speaking of planks of wood, there's also the girl who played Katara.
Oh, she was fucking terrible.
Now, in the cartoon, Katara is this beautiful angel of a girl who, of course, is the love interest for Aang.
What was her name? Do you have it in your notes?
Her name was Nicola Peltz.
Ah, yes.
She is the storyteller of the entire series, and
well,
she's got this
that.
Nice feeling about her, and then they cast this thing.
Well, can I more add, and what I actually found kind of like mildly offensive was the fact that they took a character who was incredibly strong and incredibly like self-motivated, and they just made her a wimp that was just never doing really anything of any major consequence for like the first half of the film.
She was
such an integral part of the film, and she's always the one that's egging Aang on. She's always the one that's
kind
of pushing.
And she's also the mother figure of the group.
Exactly.
By season two in particular, she becomes
she
like the mother hen.
She almost has no dialogue lines in the first half of the film.
She was the Jar Jar Binks of this film, like, seriously.
Oh,
she was just running around like, ah, look at me.
Well, we got her being the Jar Jar Binks. We've got Noah Ringer being Jake Lloyd's Anakin. We've got Jackson Rathbone being
C-3PO.
Oh my god, that's so perfect. And not only that, but like, he just has that bewildered look on his face the whole time, like, what the hell is going on?
He's Keanu Reeves for a new generation. Everything is just, whoa.
Why is it every
you
time you
imagine? Come back to my palace. I'm Princess Barbie.
You
whoa,
can just imagine.
So totally awesome.
You can just imagine M. Night setting him up for a shot where they're all standing in a group. It's like, now, I need you to pretend this water floating in the air in front of you. And he's just sitting there like, whoa. There's water. Whoa. And it's like, just hold that. Hold that. And then he goes and films it. And he's just staring into the.
I think you guys are being too hard on M. Night. I think that, in honesty, he must have had like a middle ear infection for the entire time, so he couldn't actually hear anything. So he's just watching it. He's just like, yeah.
Look,
it's a wrap. We got it.
My question is, was there nobody watching this? This film was produced by Kathleen Kennedy and Frank Marshall. They were the executive producers. Now, these are Spielberg's old producers. These guys produced Raiders of the Lost Ark. They produced E.T. You know, and you sit there and you look at it and go...
And they were both a long time ago.
Yeah, but they've got... I mean, Kennedy Marshall's been going for years, and they produced a lot of films. They produced Alive, which I really liked, you know. And you sit there and go, weren't you guys watching what was going on? Didn't you see dailies of what was happening, you know? It's like somewhere along the line, somebody had to have seen what was going on here.
There was some, like, I have to admit, mate, there was some truly horrible editing part. Like, there were moments where, like, you'd have, what's his name, Cliff Curtis talking to the general.
Oh, my
right?
God.
And
Cliff
the general
Curtis.
Would say something, and Cliff Curtis would be just like, blah, blah, blah. Blah, blah,
yeah,
blah,
no.
blah.
Was he not asleep?
He was.
He was asleep the entire time.
And then
time
the general's sorry. Like... Yes, sir. And then there's a literal 5-second dead air silence And then they just cut to something else. Yeah. And you're like, and did every we scene, need that 5 seconds of silence?
And I said to Josh, I said, every scene is written like some sort of, you know, first year screenplay writer, because every scene seems to have a resolution to it where they go, we have to go now. Let's go. Rather than just go, they're like announcing everything. Every scene has a beginning, a middle, and an end, you know? And it's like, not every scene has to have that.
I was hoping there'd be that, you know? Look, I'm about to bend water, and I will bend it in your direction and make a bubble and drown you in it, and then you will die. Ah.
What Dave brought up is a really important point. The editing was done with a butcher's knife. It was literally like scenes would end. It'd be like, bam! And that was it. It was done. And next scene.
Everything is shot so pedestrian. M. Night Shyamalan cannot direct action. Period. He hasn't got an action bone in his body. He doesn't know. And then once again, this comes down to his editing as well. But his idea of an action scene is put it all in slow motion. It's like, yeah, Sam Peckinpah used to use a lot of slow motion in the 70s, but he did it effectively, you know? And in this, it's like, we're going to bend something now, so we better do it in slow motion so you can see every cent that we spent on the special effects. There's that sequence you see in the trailer where he runs along, and I was actually hoping in the trailer was just a trailer, but in the film, it's shot exactly the same way, where he runs through, does that flip in the air, turns the guy to ice as he jumps over and lands and slides across the ground. And all I can think is, how cool would that have actually been in full speed, you know, where you actually see that happen, like in full speed. But no, every time they bend, slow motion.
But it's not only that, it's the, like, I can't speak for the comic, but there was at least like a 5 minute lead up before anything happened where they'd be sitting there. And especially when there was that, which I was expecting to be such a kick-ass scene with the prince and Aang when they get trounced by at the monk's temple. Mm. And you just see Aang standing there and he's just like,
yes. Well, that's
like 10 minutes and you're like, are you going to fucking do something?
Well, they do that in the cartoon to a degree, but it's not quite as much of a build up. The thing about the cartoon that's really clever, and this is something I probably didn't even research this to know, each of the bending styles is actually a style of Kung
Fu.
It's
actually interesting because the water is really Tai Chi.
That's
and to their credit, they have actually done that. That is actually true.
In the cartoon, they capture that really well. All the movements are actually real Kung Fu movements of different disciplines.
It is actually the same in the film, Dave. It's very underused
and it's mediocre, and it's you kind of look at it going, it's sloppy.
I really wanted
looking.
Like one of the scenes that I was actually waiting for in the film, which is one of the best scenes in the cartoon, is the fight between the general and
Zuko.
Zuko, which is the fight that really you know hones him in as a character, because he is that kind of really over energetic. He has that goal, which is actually explained in the movie, which is that he just wants to get, he wants to be respected. He wants his life back.
Yeah,
basically.
It's his goal to get the Avatar, and to get his honor back.
Look, he's impatient, and that's a folly of youth, but he is actually learning a lot. And that's all done in that one scene where he fights the general and wins. Mm. And, like, it's such an awesome fight because the fighting is really accurate and it's got that, you know, fire-on-fire style and stuff like that. Don't bother with that.
Well, it also doesn't help that the actor Asif Manvi, who actually played the general, was awful.
Oh, yeah. He was terrible.
I mean, this guy, this is the guy who was, do you guys remember Spider-Man 2?
Yeah.
He was the guy who owned the pizza shop in the opening scene. You're bloody late, mate. You know?
Yeah.
And you sit there and go, you have no strength or power behind you in any way, shape,
or
form.
And another terrible use of cartoon to movie, you know, sort of work, because in the series, he is really, really sort of sinister and he's really calculating. And in this movie, he's like a slimy, like, wimp.
Yeah.
And it's just like, if you've ever watched the series, this guy is dangerous.
It's the difference between strong and sniveling.
Look, I'm going to send M. Night Shyamalan the box set of Avatar. And I think he's actually going to look at it and go, holy shit, this was a cartoon?
No, dude, you know what it's
going to be? Why did nobody tell me before
I did this? He actually
said
in an interview I read, he actually claims he loves the cartoon. It doesn't show.
No, dude.
This is not a labor of love. This was like John Woo's paycheck. It was the exact same thing.
It was a paycheck, exactly.
It was. It really was. Like, there is nothing... Like I said, costume design and stuff like that was great. Mm-hmm. But as far as any sort of engaging or feeling anything for these characters... The only thing I felt for these characters was that I wanted them off the fucking screen.
I love Callison says, they made it a drinking game of editing. Scene done, shot. M. Night wants a twist here. Shot.
I mean, and the ending as well. It's just like, out of nowhere, it's just like, it builds to this massive crescendo, and it ended like the fucking Golden Compass, which was, they might have well have just said, like, Back to the Future 2. Stay tuned, for Back to the Future 3. It just ended so abruptly, and then it was just like, sequel coming out, not ever.
Well, it's not going to happen, but I will say I am actually vaguely pissed off. Now, actually, I'm very pissed off at M. Night Shyamalan, because this could have been a great series of films.
No, dude, seriously, don't worry. 2 to 3 years from now, someone will redo it.
Look, as far as I'm concerned, Nickelodeon... this is one of their babies. And for Riff to fuck this up so severely, Nickelodeon will remake this movie.
You see, what I'd like to see is get like a young fucking Jet Li, or do you know what I mean? Like get some little monk prodigy kid who is with the Shaolin monks, who is an absolute genius. I don't care if he can even talk speak, whatever, but just put him in, have somebody who plays the part and looks the part, because otherwise you're going to get a remake and it's going to star fucking Will Smith's kid as the lead character, and it will be Avatar the Kung Fu Kid.
And quite frankly, the one thing that they need to do, most importantly, out of all else, is they need to inject a sense of humor back into it.
Yeah.
The series is funny.
It's going to be a difficult thing to do because, one of the things I want to bring up is the fact that it is incredibly difficult to bring Eastern humor into a Western movie because the comedy is very visual and it's all about hyper-stylized, on-screen visuals, and it's very difficult.
Agree.
No, I disagree. I think it's very easy to do if you have any concept of what a director is, and he doesn't.
No.
And I just wanted to state, Dave, before you were saying you're going to send him the box set, I don't actually think it's going to have the effect you want, because I think he's just going to put it on the pile of box sets
that everybody has sent him.
I think he'll be selling it on eBay along with the deed
just
to
look.
House.
Just look for a guy called Not M. Night Shyamalan who's selling 6,000 box sets.
No, I do believe his username is Twist.
You know, in eBay how it says number of units?
28,000.
All right, we got to move on though because we're running over now.
Us
never. So I'm going to say as our summary to this. Normally we would say, would we recommend this?
No.
Mine is no.
No. Mine is buy the DVD, put it in a pile with everyone you know who has also bought a DVD, and create a giant bonfire and dance around it.
No, but that would actually require putting more money into this.
No, it's fine. Don't worry. It'll go to a good cause.
See, I just have to say, I was really disappointed as well, because I actually went to this movie. I was so excited for this movie because I actually thought, here we go. We have an instant contender for the Gloriously Wonderful Bad List. I thought when I heard that it had...
It's just the wrong bad list.
When I heard it had 8% on IMDb, I went... Eight at the time. I went, yes. By the time we went to see the movie, it was down to 7. I went, yes! I said, this is going to be such a monumental train crash that I'm just going to love this, right? But unfortunately, it was the wrong kind of bad.
No, I disagree, dude. Like, I am writing a piece to say that I think this is one of the greatest films of all time, and we're just totally missing
the
entire...
$20 for using that line.
royalties.
I'll pay you later. I will state now that I think, actually, dude, if you think about what you think about Clash of the Titans and all these sort of things, if you actually go back when you're not paying money for that movie and it's just the thing sitting in your DVD collection, you will love it as much as you love any of these movies.
Yeah, can I tell you now, Clash of the Titans is fucking Citizen Kane compared to
this. I was saying to Josh, I actually have bought Clash of the Titans and I have rewatched it. And in rewatching it, I laughed my ass off. And so I actually went, this is actually, it may be the first film that its original and its remake are on the Gloriously Wonderful Bad List.
All I can say
for completely different reasons.
If you want to watch... Go and see Avatar, spend $1.99 and buy an ice pick and stab yourself repeatedly in the crotch and in your eye, because it will be less painful than going to watch this movie. Seriously, I'm not exaggerating, I would rather watch Twilight than watch The Last Airbender again. Anyone who knows me knows how much
I actually think, I'll put it this way, I actually think New Moon... The second one, because I really didn't like the first one, but I think New Moon is a much better film.
Avatar New Moon, how awesome would that be? Make them werewolves and vampires.
Stop saying Avatar, because we're going to be mistaking it for the James Cameron thing. This is this one.
Blue people, vampires, sparkling.
No, I kind of like that. You know what? I was thinking about this before, Dave. I think the reason, you know how we had the fight, and you know Avatar was obviously Avatar before the movie Avatar, James Cameron's Avatar, ever got the name. I actually think the reason the judge sat down and gave it to James Cameron, because he sat down and looked at what had already been made.
So that's not the cartoon.
Lights, and he just went, yeah, you know what? No.
The two camps. It was like James Cameron with 80,000 lawyers and Avatar and, you know, the world's best 3D. And then... M. Night Shyamalan's camp with, you know, like...
with, like, his one cousin, lawyer. His and cousin and, M. Night and his uncle.
And M. Night there in the corner going like this.
And you know,
and then he looked at it and he was like, "Yeah, I'm going with this."
There's like James Cameron on one side of the thing with like this TV set up in 3D, no doubt, with, you know, sort of running the footage of like what they're planning to accomplish, and then there's M. Night on the other side with a drawing, like hand drawn, of a stick figure, and he's like, "There's this kid, and he's gonna save the world." And he's just like, yeah, no.
He's just got a picture of Futurama's Bender. And he's like, it's this, but imagine there's air and fire and water.
All right, we could keep going on this all night long. Or all day long. I've got more. So let's move on instead. So don't go see it. Not worth seeing. Go see Sorcerer's Apprentice instead. We do have to do our list of five before we finish. So let's do the list of five really quickly. We'll go around the table. We'll kind of kick through this pretty quickly. We don't need to go into great detail. The listener request was for techie movies. Mm-hmm. As I say, it was kind of a loose request. We're not quite sure what exactly they meant. But I will start off and say that my number five in techie movies, I'm going to put Minority Report.
Okay.
Because I love Minority Report. I love me a bit of Minority Report.
Mine's on the other end of the spectrum.
Yep.
The other side of it, because I love that as well. But I'm going to go for, of course, Left Field, Inner Space.
Oh, I forgot all about Inner Space. And its predecessor, Fantastic Voyage, which I also really liked as well.
Yeah.
Josh, number five
is Gamer. I'm not particularly sold on the film, but I think it's one of the most successful adaptions of what could possibly happen.
I agree. Yeah.
If you, you know, sort of brought what we have now into the future of gaming, that's what I think could happen.
I agree. That's very good. My number four is Swordfish. Great action film, great boobs, and great computers.
Oh, well, and keeping that thread going, I'm going to go with Johnny Mnemonic.
Oh yes! Snap.
With a whole 1 gig of data in his head.
That is right. How did he manage to get a whole gig? I don't know.
He
forgot how to say whoa for the entire film. Yeah, it was amazing.
Also, don't forget Ice-T.
Ice-T, and don't forget Henry Rollins as the Doctor.
I forgot all about that.
And of course, honorable mention to The Net as well.
Oh, no, I've actually got The Net down on a little bit of an honorary mention, so we'll come back to that in a second. Number four, Josh.
Number four is Sneakers.
Sneakers.
Really good movie and, you know, really well made. And really, really classic tech, really well put together.
Yeah. And realistic tech. Yep, I really like that about it. My number three is Antitrust.
Mm-hmm.
Which was a very loosely veiled look at Microsoft.
Yep.
It was actually a very, very good film. I enjoyed that a lot.
Mm. Number three for me. Oh, I'm going old school with you guys.
Oh, yeah.
War Games.
Oh, damn.
Very good. War Games. A classic.
Yes.
John Badham. What is it? 1984? 84. Yep. Yeah, great film. Love that. Your number three?
My number three is Terminator 2.
Oh, yeah. Dun, 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 dun. Did you hear, I've actually, we were going to bring this up in the after show, but I don't think we're going to have time. So I'll talk about it now. Did you hear that Arnold Schwarzenegger fired at Palin this week? He was flying over Alaska, and he actually took a picture out the window and wrote on his Twitter post that he couldn't see Russia.
The man has a great sense of humor, and don't let anyone tell you otherwise.
I'm sorry, look, I have to bring this up. I watched The Expendables the other day, which I fucking, of course, I loved.
I did too.
But there were just scenes where, like, every scene that Arnold was in it, and they were doing the little Bruce Willis sly banter, I was just waiting for Arnold to just stop and look at him and just go, fuck you. You know, he wants to be president, fuck you, I'll be president. It just kept running through my head.
All right, so my number two is Sneakers. So it's already been mentioned, and I think Sneakers is fabulous. So number two?
My number two is Cypher.
Oh, I haven't seen good it. Choice. No, yeah, what? No. It's a good. You have to.
That
watch
is a
that,
fucking brilliant. Lieb Schreiber, man, is fucking fantastic.
Oh, right.
And Lucy Liu.
Yeah.
Seriously. It's reminds me of Cube.
Where's Penn?
It's like one of those lower budget films, but it is it's got such a brilliant story, and the direction and the way that it's shot is fantastic. It is. I would honestly put it up there in my probably top 10 films of all time.
Fantastic. I'm going to watch that. Film.
Yeah, no, you have to watch that one.
I haven't seen it. Very good.
My number two is War Games, which I just think is an amazing film and still stands up today.
I think War Games is fabulous. I love the great big 7-inch floppies. I think they're
oh, yeah, man, for sure.
I've got a 7-inch floppy.
Right along.
All right, my number one is, well, the reason why I'm not harping on Josh's number two is because my number one is War Games. So I'm gonna say War Games for the win. Your number one.
My number one was actually tied. I tried to, but I couldn't break between the two of them, which is one that you've already mentioned, which was Minority Report and The Matrix.
Yeah, Matrix is my number one as well. Dude, seriously, best film on tech ever.
Yes. Now, I've got an honorary mentions list here of bad tech. Okay. And the two bad tech movies are, one I actually love because it is so bad, which is Hackers.
Yes.
The other one is one that I don't like so much because the tech is so bad, which is Sandra Bullock's The Net. All
right, well, I have a good bad tech as well.
Oh yeah.
2001.
But 2001's tech is actually not that bad. It's just dated.
I don't think you understand, Dave.
I can't do that, Dave. I also have one honorary mention of a film that I've only just rediscovered recently, but I saw it in the 80s, and I absolutely adored it back then. It's not a great film, but it's a lot of fun, which is called My Science Project with Dennis Hopper, where they go time traveling through a school. And it's actually a lot of fun. Very silly. And Dennis Hopper does his most outrageous, wild stuff in it. So bring that one up as well.
We've got two honorable mentions from Celine because shut her up. Weird Science she wanted to put in.
Yes. I downloaded that the other day too.
We here at Geek actually do not condone me.
When he means download, he means legally download. iTunes. Yeah, of course.
My toast paid for it.
And Brain Scan.
She kept going on about
Brain
Scan.
She just would not let Brain Scan go. So there you go.
So anyway, so those are her honorary mentions.
Yep.
So I hope that's satisfied. We'll come up with a new list for next week's show. We do have to finish up here, though, because we've got the after show coming up and we've got people waiting on Skype. So we've got to get moving. So if you agree or disagree with anything that we've had to say today on this show, get stuffed. No.
Fuck you.
If you agree or disagree with anything we've said on the show, you can send your feedback to feedback@geekactually.com. If you want to request anything or you want to request a top five list, please, by all means, send your stuff through. You can also voicemail us at 02-8011-3167, or you can also use the Skype ID geekactually, but you'll have to be approved before you can do it. So make sure you put a note
in. And also, if you have any feedback about me and you don't like what I say, make sure that you forward it to www.blowme.com.
We're going to do our customary quick shout-outs to our friends. And, of course, the first one, because I have two of them in front of me.
This one.
Is
Wonder Twins Powers.
Well, not that one. Is this one.
Raw DLC.
Take it away, dude.
Up in your face.
If you want to get some of the greatest gaming action in the history of mankind with the return, the triumphant return of Nacho's Justice this Tuesday, 8 p.m. That would be Tuesday, 8 p.m., Josh, not Monday, 8 p.m. or Wednesday, 8 p.m. As you mentioned at the beginning of last week's show.
Oh, man.
You can check us out at www.rawdlc.com/live.
Cool. And you should all check out the last episode because it has to be one of our greatest openings of all time.
It has eight
none
openings.
Of us. None of us could get that right.
He tried to get it. He fucked it up. I was like, here on DS Live. And yeah, it just
I love the way you successfully flew over that comment, though, and kept going. And then I just could not let it go. I was just like, did you just...
You just have... Yeah, because you love it when I fuck up. Because you can sit there and go, yes, I've got one. Add to the book.
All right, we also have a couple of other friends that we will just do our quick shout-outs to. Of course, the Movie Fancast and Right This Instant, two podcasts that come from themoviefanhouse.com, Charlie, Brad, and Jesse. Do check them out. You can find them on iTunes or go to moviefanhouse.com. We also have our friends over at The Real Junkies. Find them at weekendronan.com. They're a lot like us, except that they drink a lot. and they're spelled R-E-E-L. You can find them on iTunes or go to weekendronan.com. And one quick shout out to our good friend Josh Spencer over at attackninja.blogspot.com for our wonderful new cartoons. He's done a sensational job for our new cover art, and we much appreciate it. Now, I think that's it, except one last thing is that we do have two other podcasts that we do here, and one of those is called Tech Actually, which is our official tech show, which we recorded before this one, and it goes out on the feed. Just look for it on iTunes, Tech Actually. And the other one, of course, is the Geek Actually After Show, which is coming up right now on the live feed, and for the podcast listeners, comes out on Tuesday. This week,
and of course, later on tonight, don't forget the Love Actually section.
Starting at midnight, taking your requests.
And there goes the studio phone. We cannot get through a show without the studio phone going off at least once throughout a Saturday afternoon, so we'll just ignore that. And we're going to get ourselves out of here. We're going to finish, as is customary, with the new show format. We finish with a track from one of the films that we have reviewed. This time we're going to go out with The Sorcerer's Apprentice.
Oh, thank God.
actually, I will say that I actually really liked the soundtrack to The Last Airbender. I thought James Newton Howard's score was lovely.
Mm. But, anything that distracted from the acting was a definite plus.
So we are going to get ourselves out of here.
I was stabbing myself in the foot. That was helping me.
In the meantime, we'll sign out the way we always sign out, and then we can chit-chat away.
sorry, Seacrest out. Oh, wait, that was a while ago.
We'll sign out with Go See More Movies You Don't See Enough Movies, and all of life's questions are answered in the movies, and we will catch you all next week.